Good evening. I'm Michael Carey, the moderator of this year's running program. Thank you for joining us. Tonight and throughout the week, you will have a chance to meet and hear from legislative candidates for seats throughout South Central Alaska. We invited all the candidates to participate. Those appearing on the program are those who accepted our invitation. Candidates who are unopposed will have a chance to talk directly to the voters. Joining me tonight are Daisha Eaton of KSK Radio and Grace Jang of KTVA Television. Now let's meet the candidates for Senate District H. They are Berta Gardner, the Democrat, and Republican Don Smith. Berta Gardner, your opening one-minute statement, please.
Thank you very much, and thank you all. Thank you to KSK for hosting this. Good evening. I'm Berta Gardner. My husband and I have lived 20 years in this Midtown district, raising our children and running several small businesses here. I've been the bookkeeper and office manager for a locally owned retail and wholesale chain. I've been a professional advocate for children in state custody, mostly foster care, and I've continually doing sales, customer service, and bookkeeping for my husband's small software development company. During the years that our three children were attending local schools, I've been very involved as a volunteer in schools and with PTA. I do this because, A, it's good parenting. B, it's good for the schools and the community. And C, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I've also been actively engaged with community councils for a couple of decades now. And I continue to do that as a legislator. I go to all the community council meetings I possibly can. I didn't think my experience would lead to public service, but it has, and I agreed to run out of a sense of obligation, not ambition.
Okay, we'll
it's
have to
a
leave
wonderful
her,
job. I love it.
We'll have to leave it right there and hear from Don Smith for 1 minute.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening. My name is Don Smith. I'm running for the State Senate, Seat H. My background, I've lived in this community all my life. I'm a third-generation Anchorage resident. Matter of fact, my mother was the eighth child born in Anchorage back in 1916. I've served in the legislature before. I'm currently serving on the Anchorage School Board. I spent 10.5 years on the Anchorage Assembly and participated in writing the charter for the municipality of Anchorage back in the 1970s. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and looking forward to questions and opportunity to discuss issues. Thank you.
Let's go to Daisha Eaton for the first question.
This is a question from Ms. Gardner. The bipartisan coalition has become a central issue in this election. You've worked in it before. Can you defend it to those who might be critical?
Okay, well, first of all, I haven't been part of the bipartisan coalition because I've been in the House and I was the minority whip in the House as part of leadership. I think that across the nation and in Alaska, people are hungry for politicians to work together. And I think that when people from both sides work together in one coalition, the far sides have to roll in toward the middle, and they work on the things that everybody agrees with, the broad middle. I think that's important. I think it's of great value, and I hope that it will happen again. I think there is broad support, and I've knocked on all the doors and knocked on all the neighborhoods that I haven't already represented, and people are wildly enthusiastic about the bipartisan coalition.
Don Smith, 30 seconds.
Well, I hate to bring cold water to the issue, but I think you're going to see a legislature, the state senate, organized under the Republican Party this year. Our district is probably iffy in terms of which party is kind of in control, but my best look at the state senate this next year, it'll be probably 14 Republican members which will organize the Senate.
Grace Jang.
This question is for Mr. Smith. You were one of the only school board members to vote against extension of the free meal program for low-income students for ASD. The money would have been reimbursed by the federal government. Can you explain your position?
Sure. The problem we have in politics in general, but that's, to me, a good example. Anchorage, Alaska has a 5.7% poverty rate, yet 44% of all the students that attend Anchorage schools are eligible and are given free meals if they want them. I was raising the question, why? Why are we doing that? I mean, I realize it's federal money. It's money from Uncle Sugar. He's going to give us all this wonderful, these programs, and we're going to go out and just perpetuate problems. And I think it's important for the community to understand that $19 million, 5.7% of the kids really need assistance based on their poverty status, and yet we're feeding 44%.
Berta Gardner, 30 seconds.
I actually really like this question because, in my view, Mr. Smith was the only member who voted against it. But in my view, if as a state we aren't interested in feeding hungry children, and in an ideal world, all parents would support their children and feed them. That doesn't happen. And for whatever reason, any school nurse can tell you the numbers of kids that come to their office with headaches and stomach aches, and it turns out the kids are hungry. We know hungry kids don't learn. Our obligation is to help kids get a good education, and if it takes feeding them, then I think that that's something we should be doing.
Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. Smith. You, as you said, you served before. Mm-hmm. Why are you choosing to run again right now?
I enjoy being involved in the political process. I'm currently on the school board. I've had an opportunity to, you know, to be a voice for issues that I think need to be talked about. Alaska has been my home all my life. I'm very much involved in the political process, and I feel it's important. And I learned a long time ago, you can be on a board, on a commission, you can go to a community meeting, voice your opinion, but if you're not there able to push the red or the green button, you're really not able to make change. And I think it's important for people to be involved. As long as you get the health and the wherewithal, I think it's important.
Berta Gardner, 30 seconds.
Thank you. Democracy is about citizen participation, having a citizen government. I think it's really important for citizens to have a choice, and I think Mr. Smith and I both agree that it is a rewarding, an interesting, and an important service.
Okay, Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. Smith. How would you have voted on House Bill 110?
No. I'm sorry, I voted yes. Not no.
How would you have voted?
I would have voted in favor.
Okay.
Can you expound?
Well, I think Alaska is facing some very serious challenges, and one of them is we're not competitive any longer. And if we can't figure out a way, and I don't want to give anything mm-hmm. away to anyone, but I want to see Alaska become competitive, or we're not going to have any. We're not going to be able to support this television station with the grants that it receives if we don't have some revenue coming in. And we are in trouble. $2 billion a year right now, we're overspending that from what we really should be spending. We've got to get control over that issue or we're going to be in deep trouble.
Let's go back to Grace Jang.
Ms. Gardner didn't get a chance to
Okay, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I voted no, and I would continue to do that, giving billions of dollars billions and billions of dollars away to the multinational oil companies without any obligation that they invest in Alaska and hire Alaskans for jobs, I think is irresponsible. And even people who supported that bill on the House floor are now sort of backtracking and saying it went too far. There's a world of difference between making adjustments and giving away billions of dollars with no strings attached that would put us in deficit immediately.
Okay, Grace Jang.
This question is for Ms. Gardner. Can crime rates be curbed through legislation and at the state level?
I think it's tough to do it through legislation. I think the key to curbing crime rates, a big key, is having really viable, quality alcohol treatment available for anybody who wants it and who acknowledges they have a problem. It should be on an affordable scale. We know that many crimes are committed by people who are under the influence of drugs or feeding their drug habits and their alcohol habits and the brawling. The impact of alcohol problems in particular, but other substances too, on our budgets are phenomenal. They impact not only individual lives, but social justice system, justice and corrections and highway safety and our schools, and just about everything you can imagine is impacted by that. And we can reduce recidivism by providing treatment for those who are incarcerated.
Mr. Smith, 30 seconds.
Well, actually, Anchorage has done a pretty good job over the last several years. I think our crime rate is significantly down from what it's been in the past. So I think move along in the pattern that we have with this community, at least with the city of Anchorage.
Okay, Grace, let's stick with you for the last question here.
Okay, this question is for Ms. Gardner. This is something you touched upon in your statement. You say you're a professional advocate for foster kids. Many children. Many of our children are in state custody, and OCS is involved in every aspect of that. Does OCS need to be overhauled or reformed?
Absolutely. I think anybody who works in that field has had frustration. Part of the problem is that the problem itself is so heartbreaking and so pervasive. Part of it is they don't always have the resources. Their caseloads are higher than they should be based on national averages. But the bottom line is everybody gets frustrated with the way the system works. I think their data processing could be greatly improved so that people get information and cases can be followed correctly. I got a call from a former constituent out of state that we're working on a case there, and it's just a problem. It's a heartbreaking issue that requires prompt and effective solutions, and we're not there.
Mr. Smith, 30 seconds.
My number two daughter works for that agency that handles these kind of situations. I think the problem we have is we don't have enough ability to force people into programs where we can make some changes. We coddle people too much. We give them an opportunity to time and time and time again abuse and mistreat their children, and we don't come down like we should in making life a little miserable for them, so they'll understand they can't continue that lifestyle.
Now we'll go to the candidates questioning one another. If you receive a question, you'll have 45 seconds to respond. The person who asks the questions will have 15 seconds to comment on the response. Ms. Gardner, you're first.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, you've repeatedly critiqued my candidacy for the possibility that I would be in the minority. And at the same time, you said you would not participate in a bipartisan majority, potentially opting yourself to sit in the minority. One of the things you say the problem with the minority, and the example you give is the lake and the park.
We got to have a question there.
Okay. Would you reconsider that? Because your current position does not bear, I don't think, reality. You'd either choose to be in the minority if there's a bipartisan coalition, or you would insist that the majority is the only thing to do.
I will not join a coalition unless it's a coalition that's made up of 14 senators and one Donnie Olson or someone like Donnie coming from rural Alaska. I will not be a part of an organization much like we have this or currently have in the state Senate this year. It's not what I want to participate. I'd rather sit in the minority status rather than be in that environment. I think it's wrong.
Ms. Gardner.
Thank you. So you don't agree that people are tired of the sniping and the partisanship and want legislators who are willing to work together and solve problems together.
Mr. Smith, now it's your opportunity to ask a question. That was rhetorical, I took it as.
Okay, well, my question, I guess, would be, I've noticed over the last 12 months that Ms. Gardner has received $16,500, I'm sure the next APOC report will show additional money coming out of the labor unions, and I just think I'd like to know what she's expected to do with that kind of donation.
Thank you. I've had almost 600 individual donations during this campaign cycle, of which 19 of those donations come from labor unions. Frankly, I'm proud to have the support of the working men and women of Alaska, and I also understand that every one of those donations represents small amounts donated by individual members of those unions. What I'm expected to do is study the facts on every issue and make the best judgment call that I can.
Mr. Smith, 15 seconds.
Those are not small little contributions. Those are $1,000 contributions given by unions. They're putting out mailers for her. They're doing all of the candidates as well. I think it's not right.
Mr. Smith, you'll have an opportunity for another question.
I'm curious, Berta, the APOC reports show that you've accepted $5,665 from Juneau residents in small contributions, generally $50 and $100. Why in the world would Juneau residents be so interested in seeing an Anchorage legislator elected?
I think it's understood that Juneau is a very Democrat-heavy community. I have a lot of friends. I'm active in the local church there, my church when I'm in Juneau. And people are eager to support my candidacy because they see me as a good, solid legislator who represents interests across the state.
Mr. Smith, 15 seconds.
No comment.
Berta Gardner, your opportunity for a question.
Thank you. Well, a couple of the questions I wanted to ask about was hungry kids. That was one, but I guess I'll go with this one. In 2006, after you lost the Republican primary, you wrote an endorsement piece for me, which I much appreciated. You explain it by saying Vika was about to get in trouble. I mean, I knew what was going on for several years prior to that, where you could see the money flow that was being orchestrated through Bill Allen, Rick Smith, and
those
guys.
We need a question here.
Okay. If you knew for several years about the Vika corruption, did you take any steps whatsoever to stop that? And do you have any grounds for your allegation that your opponent knew about or had any part in that
45 seconds, Mr.
Like most people, I think, that were active in the political process, we saw what was happening with Vico. At the time, the candidate that was running against you was being heavily financed by either Bill Allen and top executives with that corporation and people that they could influence. It wasn't illegal, but to me it was wrong. I mean, they had the right to give. The law didn't say you couldn't give $500 and you couldn't have 10 or your chief executives in your company give $500 each, but it was obvious that there was stuff going on. And I end my article when I justify. I'm an Alaskan first and a Republican second.
Mr. Smith, your question.
I don't have any more.
You're sure?
I am absolutely sure.
All right. Ms. Gardner, do you have a question here before we move on to another segment of our debate?
Thank you. I think I'll pass also.
Okay, so we're going to go to questions from the reporters. Let's start with Daisha Eaton.
This is for Mr. Smith. Should we be funding through public monies, charter schools, private schools, and parochial schools?
I believe that that's a good expenditure of public money. I think if you look at the record, the charter schools and these special schools that we have, particularly in Anchorage, because I'm not familiar with other communities, are doing wonderful work. And they're producing some wonderful kids that are learning. Frankly, I think if you were to gauge or compare those programs to the actually Anchorage School District, they probably are superior.
I'm not just talking about the charter schools that already exist, but expanding to parochial schools in particular. Would you support a constitutional amendment then?
I would. I think that they have done, I mean, if you look at the statistics, you'll see that it works. And that kind of a program, I frankly, if I had my way, I'd have a charter school program in every grade school and try to get the parents to get involved through that little charter school that's in the corner of the building.
Berta Gardner, 30 seconds.
Thank you. I think charter schools through the Anchorage School District or local school districts are wonderful. I think they offer options for parents, and they get people engaged in their school. They take ownership of their local schools. I think it's fantastic. I would like to broadly expand that. I do not support in any way, shape, or form using state money for religious schools or for private schools.
Grace Jane.
This question is from Ms. Gardner. It's a two-part question. Should we have a constitutional convention? And if voters decide, yes, that we should, what would you change?
I do not think we should have a constitutional convention. It comes up every 10 years after the census, and Alaska's constitution is really, I think, one of the very best. We had the opportunity to review all the other state constitutions when we drafted ours. And in fact, people have come from other countries to study our constitution and talk about it. I don't think we need a constitutional convention. I think the people who appointed the redistricting board will very likely be responsible for reappointing members of the constitutional convention. And I think it opens up the door to a lot of harm. It's not broken. I don't think we need to fix it. We can amend the Constitution. I don't have anything in particular right now that I would be pushing for an amendment.
Mr. Smith, 30 seconds.
I also agree. I don't think we need a constitutional convention. If we could have some kind of a partial constitutional convention where you could go after one particular item that was important to the community or the state, I might support that. But to just open up the door and redo the Constitution, I think, is a big mistake.
Daisha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Gardner. This is about health care. We have some very expensive health care here in Alaska. Often it's not accessible as well. People are flying out of state to have procedures done down in Seattle. We hear about it. How can we make it more affordable, and what can you do from Juneau to help with the situation?
Well, one of the things, and we focused on this, is expanding the community health centers that have a sliding scale. We opened the new clinic for Medicare so that older people who have trouble finding providers can get help. And I am a big proponent of using allied health professionals like nurse practitioners. And I've done that myself for many years and go only to a specialist if there's a particular need. It's less expensive, it's easy to get in, and I find they have more time to talk about the treatment options and why they're choosing a particular one over something else. And it is just a much more satisfying and very effective thing. I think the state can continue to do that.
Mr. Smith.
Definitely a major problem for the state. I mean, the cost of medical, I mean, I'm in my 70s now and, you know, was fearful a few years ago about whether or not my insurance was going to carry me well enough to where I could even go to a doctor. I think the idea of having specialists, neighborhood-type programs where you can go and get basic health care services are important. But unfortunately, we live in a very costly place.
We'll go to Grace Jang for a question. I'm going to alert the panelists. We have a little extra time here, so be prepared for a couple more questions.
Okay.
Grace Jang.
Thank you. This question is for Mr. Smith. You pride yourself on being the father of the tax cap, speaking about the municipality. How would you translate that experience to the state level?
Well, I don't think the way the Constitution is written that we can actually create a tax cap in the state, but I wish we had something like that, because it does force governments to have to take a hard look at what's important. And that's all my charter amendment did when I wrote it almost 30 years ago. It just tells the elected officials, the mayor, that you have a lid. I don't care how you spend it. You can cut this program out or you can add this program, but you've got to stay under that limit. And I think it's worked. I mean, Anchorage hasn't suffered as a community, I don't believe, in the 28 years that's been on the books. But I guarantee the taxpayers have really benefited.
Ms. Gardner.
Thank you. I think that we need to just look at budgets very carefully, all budgets, every budget, all the time. It's hard to do because there's always a big upward pressure and people want things. But I think that in recent years we have been successful in, even as we've spent a lot, but we've also socked away a lot. And Alaska is the envy of a lot of other states in terms of the financial resources that we have.
Daisha Eaton.
This is for Ms. Gardner. This is about renewable energy. Mm-hmm. We just saw Fire Island get started up, and there's talk about more renewable energy projects. What would you prioritize as a renewable energy project here in this region?
Well, I think it's very important for us, first of all, to have a policy of increasing our use of renewable energies. You know, they're more expensive at the front end when you set them all up, but once you do, for the life of the project, they run at a really reliable, predictable, and stable thing. The wind energy at Siri is one. I think that there's a lot of different things that we can do. Hydro we have. I support some version of the Susitna Dam. I think the data's not all in as to which we should do, but I think hydropower is a very important element of our potential portfolio. So that's where I am.
Mr. Smith, 30 seconds.
Well, I too support the Susitna Dam project. I think that's essential if we're going to have a long-term ability to maintain energy. But we need to get a gas line down into South Central Alaska. That's not renewable, but we've got to get a gas line down here. We're going to be in deep trouble in just a number of years. So.
Okay, now let's go back to Grace, and this will be the last question in this segment.
Okay, this is perfect because you touched on what I was going to ask. Gas line, what is the ideal plan for one? Is there one in our future?
I think there is. I mean, unfortunately, the market's changed so dramatically over the years. I mean, we start to plan something and we get out to a point and all of a sudden it's falling apart because the economy doesn't work anymore. But I think we have to get Tidewater Gas into the South Central area. I personally think Kenai would be the right place for a gas line to go, but so that we can export, but that we can also enter the grid and make sure that Anchorage has adequate, you know, sources of energy for the next 100 years.
Berta Gardner, 30 seconds.
Ideal plan, very, very clearly, is the biggest gas pipeline we can get to Tidewater. I think that Valdez is more promising than the Kenai, but I don't really care which one, whoever wants to do it. It's the only way to lock in relatively low-price gas for the Rail Belt consumers and particularly our constituents.
Okay, now we're going to go back to the reporters for questions. Each of you will have 30 seconds to respond to the same question. So we'll go to Daisha Eaton and then Grace, and then we'll go to closing statements.
I'm going to start with Ms. Gardner. During your service in Juneau, what pieces of legislation, what projects are you most proud of?
I guess what I'm most proud of, actually, is working really hard to defeat House Bill 110. I think that the challenge is really to be, whether we are a sovereign state or whether we are giving away our resources unnecessarily and allowing the decisions that impact our future all across the board and allowing those decisions to be made outside of Alaska.
Mr. Smith, 30 seconds.
How do I answer that? I wasn't there.
Right.
My biggest accomplishment, I think, is the tax cap that I did when I was, 30 years ago. I've sat on the school board, and I've pushed very hard for career and technical training. We've expanded the program significantly. We now have about $19 million being spent on career and technical training in the schools, and we have increased by bond issue about $40 million of facility improvements, or in the case of West Roamake, a new facility. And those are going to bring big, big dividends. It didn't cost us any more money in terms of budget, but we were able to reallocate some funds and create a wonderful program that's going to pay off in big ways.
Let's go to our closing statements, and we'll start with Berta Gardner.
Thank you very much. I think of legislative work as being like raising children. It can take all of your courage, your strength, your wisdom, your patience, your energy. It can be unimaginably frustrating and also boundlessly rewarding. And when you're doing it, you can hardly imagine anything that's more fun or more important. I entered the legislature focused on education, on healthy families and healthy communities, and I realized quickly that in order to advocate for that, we had to focus on jobs, on resource development, on developing our state, and on building a really meaningful opportunity for every Alaskan to get education and employment. I've spent the summer walking the district, every neighborhood street I hadn't already represented, talking with voters and listening to their concerns. I hope to earn your confidence in your vote in November. I'd be honored to serve as a senator for District H, which is Spinard Midtown, the UMed district. I'm Berta, and I'm still listening.
And let's go to Don Smith for 1 minute.
Well, I'd like to thank the station for providing this service. It's a pleasure to be here and talk about some of the issues. I pride myself on having actually done some things in the majority, which I will be if I'm elected this fall. The tax cap has meant a lot to Anchorage residents in the form of keeping their taxes down. I've been very active in programs like the after-school latch string. I started that when I was on the assembly. It's a program now that's probably in 23 to 25 schools in Anchorage where children don't go home to an empty house, but they stay at school and mother and dad pick them up at 5 o'clock after work. I've been very involved. I've actually done it. I've been a part of government services and activities for a number of years. I'm proud of that, and look forward to serving Anchorage.
Thank you, Ms. Gardner. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Now we'll meet the candidates for House District 15. Stay with us.
Election Day is November 6th. From the presidential race to Alaska's at-large House seat to ballot measures, every vote matters. Every issue matters. Hi, I'm Peter Granitz, APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent. I'll be at the Dena'ina Center election night, recapping the national races and what it means for our state. What happens if the Senate changes hands? Will Congress remain divided? Can an election remedy some of the brinksmanship? And how can Alaska regain some clout at the Capitol? Tune in to KSKA Anchorage on Tuesday night, November 6th, for APRN's special election night coverage.
Join KSKA on election night. Tuesday, November 6th, NPR coverage continues at 7 p.m., and statewide coverage from the Alaska Public Radio Network begins at 9 p.m. You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.
Now let's meet the House candidates in District 15. They are Democrat Andy Josephson and Republican Dick Traney. For opening statements, we'll start with Mr. Josephson. 1 minute, please.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. Good evening. I'm Andy Josephson. I'm a candidate for the State House here in the UMed District. In fact, we're sitting here now. Folks living near the university are going to get someone new to represent them in Juneau. It's a guarantee. My approach or style to serving you would be about work ethic, accessibility, and honesty. Relative to views or positions, and we'll get into the meat of them, I want to be consistent, I want to be someone you can rely on, I want to be moderate but principled. I want to be a consensus builder, and I think I've shown that by knocking on over 4,000 doors. I've received the endorsement from 12, I think, worthy organizations. And since this is a job application, I want to talk about my background. I've lived in the state for 48 years. I've worked as a public school and UAA teacher. I've served as a state prosecutor and legislative aide, and I've served you on the Planning and Zoning Commission. I'm the only candidate in this race with a plan, and you can see it at my website, electandystatehouse.com. We need leaders who've proven that they will work as hard as it takes, listen to Alaskans, and have the integrity to see the job through. That's what I'm going to bring to this task, and I'd appreciate your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Dick Traney for a one-minute opening statement.
Thank you. Appreciate the time to speak to you today. My name is Dick Traney. I'm running for House District 15. I have lived here for, let's see, I stepped off the airplane the 26th of April, 71, for a long time. I've been in the Anchorage Assembly now for 14 years. I've served you there. And the Assembly is a good training ground for the state legislature because the issues we have are neither Republican or Democrat. They're just issues facing Anchorage. And the same thing happens in the state of Alaska. I work bipartisan, as the record shows you, across the board with every assembly member that's been elected. I work with them to get effective things done for my district in Midtown. I've done everything from creating dog parks to banning secondhand smoke across Anchorage. So we've done this. I've got one wife, eight kids, and multiple grandchildren. So I'm invested in the state of Alaska, and I want to make sure this is a place where these kids can go to school, grow up, and get a job. Because nothing's worse than a grandparent that has to call their grandkids outside or only sees them once a year on vacation. I enjoy being able to see my grandkids every day of the week.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to reporter questions, starting with Daisha Eaton.
This is a question for Mr. Traney. You're currently a member of the Anchorage Assembly, as you said. So why are you running for State House?
Because I find there are things being done to Anchorage out of Juneau that we need to change. For example, go to the Spine Center that's just right down the road from us. The state took that off our tax rolls. We lost $100,000 when that went off our tax rolls. The state mandates we have to do other things like exemption for religious organizations. They recently took all of the buildings off that you could possibly identify for a minister's domicile off our tax rolls. Never asked us, just took them off. There's a lot of things going on in Juneau that I think affect Anchorage and need to be adjusted for the realities here in Anchorage. For example, like senior center property tax discount. The state mandates we give it, but the state sends Anchorage no money for it. So I want to protect Anchorage. It needs
Mr.
to be Justin, done down there.
30-second comment.
Well, I don't have any particular reaction to his comment. I mean, my concern with Mr. Traney's candidacy is that he has told several organizations that he would never join a coalition. And I'm concerned that while he has some background, certainly, particularly in local politics, I'm concerned that he would be ineffective at dealing with the right wing of the state house. That's my main concern.
Okay, Grace Jang, your question.
This question is from Mr. Josephson. What are the unique needs of your district, and how would you meet them on the state level?
Well, thank you, Grace. My district is unique, I think, in that it's the university and medical center. So it's an economic center, and we need to keep neighborhood integrity. That is, we need to be able to keep neighborhoods intact, and I'm concerned that my opponent hasn't always supported that. In fact, we'll talk about that later. But we also need to buttress and promote the economic future of that district. Other than that, and I want to be a part of that, and by the way, I would note that I have been connected to the University of Alaska as a professor. I was degreed from there. I care greatly about the University of Alaska. But other than that, I think the UMed's constituents are sort of had the normal needs of most Alaskans.
Let's go to Mr. Traney's comment on what he's heard.
I've got no problem with what I've heard. He and I share a similar background. My degrees, including my master's, are from UAA. I teach there. I've taught UAA to current date since 92. So I share the same concern for UAA's development. When I first started going to UAA, it was a little office located in Windler Junior High School. Didn't even have UAA here. So I've been with them for a long time.
Back to you, Daisha Eaton.
And this is for Mr. Josephson. You seem sort of similar here in this conversation. How do you differentiate yourself from your opponent?
Daisha, I'm really glad, genuinely, that you asked that. You know, there are three ways that I think are critical. in which Mr. Traney and I differ. And I want to tell you, first of all, that we were just in the waiting room, and we were laughing it up. I mean, he made me laugh, I know that. But here's how, and I respect him greatly, but here's how we differ. Number one, he has told Prosperity for Alaska, for example, that he thinks the operating and capital budgets are satisfactory the way they are. I don't think they are. I want to be more of a budget hawk than Mr. Traney apparently wants to be on that question. And what concerns me is when you combine that comment to Prosperity for Alaska with his belief that Governor Parnell has the right approach on oil and gas tax, and here I'm talking about House Bill 109, you have a potential calamity. In fact, the Office of Management Budget itself has said we'd be in deficit spending. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Traney told Prosperity for Alaska that if we don't correct one of these imbalances, will result in an income tax. And I don't think he has seen that that's the complexity. You can't have the Parnell bill and the current spending.
And Mr. Traney, 30 seconds.
Unlike my opponent, I actually lived under income tax in Alaska because I'm a little older than he is. I dealt with income tax. I paid income tax up here. And I don't want to see it come back again. But we do need to get a control on the amount of spending the state's doing. And right now it seems to be about the right amount. I think it was $6.5 billion last year in the operating, about $2 billion in the capital. So we need to work at it. There are no easy answers.
Grace Jang, your second question.
And this question is from Mr. Traney. Proposition 5 would have extended protection to members of the city's LGBT community. Mm-hmm. And it was defeated. Do you think that it needs to be brought back on a state level?
That's one option. I wouldn't support it. I think here in Anchorage, they dealt with that issue. It went to the voters decided. So I wouldn't support it on the state level.
Mr. Josephson.
Well, again, Grace, I appreciate the question. It's another area, just as I addressed with Daisha, where there's a distinction with us. Now, I want to make something very clear. I am not running for the state house because I have some social agenda. I have no social agenda. However, early in his career, Mr. Traney told the press and others that he believed being homosexual was a learned trait. Now, that suggests it can be unlearned. He did not see it as some sort of predisposition, innocuously. And I think this is another distinction between us. In fact, he and his wife led
a
proposition.
Okay, we're going to have to stop there. Okay, Daisha Eaton. Thank you.
This is for Mr. Josephson. Our state constitution specifically says that schools and institutions shall be free from sectarian control, that no money should be paid from public funds to benefit religious or private educational institutions. So should public funds be used then to pay for private, charter, and parochial schools? Yes or no?
The answer is no. In fact, your question suggests the answer. It's essentially illegal. And Mr. Traney and I will agree on this, I'm confident, because I've seen his response on this issue. Now, having said that, my own wife is a minister of the gospel. She teaches at a parochial school, Anchor Lutheran School. So I have no problem with private schools. I eat food that comes from her labor. But I believe in a strong public school system. I believe that our founding fathers in 1955 at the UAF campus got that right, and I'll stand up for that every time.
Mr. Traney, 30 seconds.
As he said, he and I both agree on this issue. I don't want to see public education broken down to a little group, a little school here for this group, another school here. The nice thing about public education, it treats everybody the same. It teaches the kids that they're all basically the same. And I don't want to see them broken into one school for one group, one school for another group. I said this to the Tea Party and probably caused a riot when I said it, but they're wrong, okay? It needs to be the way we've got it now, where kids are treated exactly the same.
Final question, Grace Jang, for Mr. Traney.
Mr. Traney, so emergency responders are dealing with this growing issue of synthetic drug use. Mm-hmm. You dealt with it on the city level.
We dealt with it long before time the state got around to it. We did it fast.
Right, but as soon as a compound is bound, as soon as a compound is banned, let's say in spice, the drug makers come up with a different compound. Mm-hmm. So can the laws ever keep up with the drug makers?
You know, that's a question we're going to have to ask our attorneys to see if there's a way they can come up with a law that says if it's similar to this or has these components, simply changing one aspect won't change the intent of the law. Because it's a problem. We dealt with it here a long time before the state did. And we need to figure out from the state level how we can deal with that and make the law current with what the reality of the chemical industry is.
Mr. Josephson, 30 seconds.
Well, I essentially agree with Mr. Traney on that. You know, Grace, there is an infamous sort of out-of-state legislative think tank called ALEC, and they bring legislation in that they recommend that's very controversial. Here, we could look at the lower 48 and say, this is a nonpartisan issue. We all want to curb drugs in our society. And so we should look down there, if we can, and find out what we can do to, you know, to curb this kind of problem.
Okay, now we'll turn to candidate questions. We'll start with Mr. Josephson for Mr. Traney. You'll have 15 seconds for a question. He'll have 45 seconds to respond, and you'll have 15 seconds to comment on what you've heard.
So, sure. Thank you, Mr. Carey. Mr. Traney, with great respect, and I do admire your work on the Assembly, do you believe that you have been fully compliant and transparent relative to APOC filings?
I think so. I've tried, but I do APOC filings myself. So, who knows? I think I have been. I've tried. Okay. Obviously, you have a different opinion.
Well, my concern is that I wrote Mr. Traney on the 21st of August in an email, and I talked to him at the polling place. We happened to poll at the same or vote on the same moment. And he did not reflect any expenses on his August 21st report, and I know he's had expenses that were not reflected. He was once fined $11,000 by APOC, and I was sort of surprised that when I offered that he cure this, he didn't cure it.
Okay, let's go to Mr. Traney. It's now your opportunity to question for Mr.
As did Mr. Begich. I don't remember. He was fined by them, too, as is every other politician, because APOC has their own view.
Is there a way to work that into a question?
Have you looked at Begich's filings with APOC? Because I guarantee he's been fined, too.
I haven't. I would say that I appreciate that complying with APOC is a difficult thing. But my campaign, if we have a 50-cent expense on a gum wrapper, it's reflected on our reports. We take pride in that. We think the public's entitled to that information. And I've been frustrated because we've been sort of guessing up until the 80th day of the campaign what Mr. Traney was spending on his campaign.
Okay, Mr. Traney, 15 seconds if you want to comment.
No, I only had one expense, and that was Hellenthal's. I know you and I discussed the filing fee, if that's an expense. That's not an expense because it doesn't happen until the campaign's created. You pay the filing fee to file for office, which I find to be odd because I've never had to file before.
It's your opportunity to ask a second question.
Second question? Tell me, what's your understanding of the Second Amendment as applies to the states, the individual right to keep and bear arms?
Sure. You know, I taught constitutional law for 6 years at the University of Alaska, and I would swear an oath to uphold both the state and the United States Constitution. And I would tell you that I've read the Heller case out of Washington, D.C. from several years ago. It's a tough 5-4 decision. It allows for some local regulation. There's a little opening there that Justice Scalia discussed, but I would respect that decision. Through the 14th Amendment, those rights are incorporated to the states, and state citizens have the right to keep and bear arms.
Mr. Traney.
And you'll do nothing to impinge on that right?
I will do nothing to impinge on that right.
Mr. Josephson, your opportunity for a question again from Mr. Traney.
Thank you again, Michael. Relative to the sidewalk ordinance, Mr. Traney, do you believe that you have had a consistent approach in how you have voiced your opinions before your constituencies?
I think so. Here's the issue with the sidewalk ordinance. I asked Civil Liberties Union if they had an issue with this, and they said no. Later on, they told me, well, that wasn't quite correct. They did have an issue with it because I was concerned. I've been criticized by some Republicans for caring what Civil Liberties says, but I'm concerned that they do check our rights to make sure they're not being violated.
Mr.
That's the reason I tried to repeal the thing.
Well, I mean, the concern is that, you know, he was for the sidewalk ordinance before he was against it. I mean, I'm using the John Kerry line used against Senator Kerry, but it's true. And I'm concerned that Mr. Traney, albeit he's a good man and he's worked hard for our community, he tends to shoot from the hip. I would have known that the ACLU would not have tolerated such a thing.
Okay, Mr. Traney, your third question.
Let's see. Last year, the legislature dealt with the Castle Law. Are you familiar with it?
I am.
Well, to protecting your home. What's your position on the Castle Law?
I think the Castle Law is great. My concern, however, and I'm speaking to the voters here, my concern is with taking it to the nth degree with Stand Your Ground legislation. We've seen in the Trayvon Martin case what can happen in those circumstances. And I don't think it's a radical position to say there's some duty, however modest, to retreat before you start shooting at someone you believe is an intimidator.
Mr. Traney.
Nothing else.
Okay. Mr. Josephson, your final question for Mr. Traney.
Thank you. Mr. Traney, you told the Tea Party that you only became a Republican about half a year ago, and you hadn't been a Republican party member until 30 years prior. Why is it that you waited 30 years to become a Republican?
You got it wrong. Anyway, I was a Republican for probably 35 years, but I was a little disappointed in some of their actions, so I became nonpartisan to reflect my office, because we're elected nonpartisan. I changed it back. So
15 seconds.
Well, while I appreciate that answer, what Mr. Traney told the Tea Party was that he supported Romney as standard bearer because he couldn't support the other candidates over the last 30 years, and that would include President Reagan, the Bushes, Dole, and McCain. And this is the problem with Mr. Traney. He's a good man, but no one understands where he lines up.
Okay, we have to leave it there. Now we go back to our reporter questions, and we're going to Daisha Eaton for Mr. Josephson.
Mr. Josephson, driving while impaired is still a serious problem throughout the state, despite continued crackdowns. What, if anything, can the state do to prevent it?
You know, as a former state prosecutor, Daisha, I tried those cases, and I took cases to 12-panel juries, felony cases, and saw people put away. I was tough on those cases. And we would not back away from a DWI case unless we just didn't have the evidence. You know, I commend Mr. Traney on this point. I think he's done a good job at the local level to crack down on this, and he deserves credit for that. I've been tough on him in this debate, but where he's right, he's right. Now, I would say that we should look at this from all angles, though. We should look at it from the front side, the alcohol in intake side, and we should look at it from the Title 12 sentencing side. I would be open to dialogue on any reform that the public thinks might be warranted.
Mr. Traney, 30 seconds.
Just I think the state needs to adopt what I've put into Anchorage. The first time we lock a car for 30 days, second time we sell your car. It's been very effective dealing with drunk drivers. It doesn't get rid of the problem, but it does take the implements away from them. We did that back in 93. I brought that forward, and it's worked. I want to see the state adopt that.
Grace Jang for Mr. Traney.
Mr. Traney, you're well aware that the city has some budget issues and fire stations and police officer jobs could be on the line. If those are cut, is it the state's responsibility to take up where the city left off?
I don't think so. I think there's money out there. We just have to reallocate the funding. I think there's money out there in this budget. We've got the way our system works, we've got the mayor that introduces the budget and the assembly reacts to it. So we're in the process of doing that right now. And I find it interesting, there was an article in the ADN yesterday from somebody that said, why is the assembly cutting youth court? The assembly's not cutting youth court. We haven't dealt with the budget yet. That's the mayor that's cutting it. But beyond that, getting back to fire stations. Fire station 15 is one the mayor is proposing to cut on either version of the budgets. That fire station needs to be kept operational because the voters in 2004 approved the bond to bring that station online. For example, you saw truck 11 that's being cut. They were the ones that 3 weeks ago saved a guy from drowning. If station Truck 11's gone, that person would not be alive today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Josephson.
You know, Grace, my view on this is that although the state wants us to be self-disciplined, that's why they gave us home rule power, that's why they let us create a municipality, we were supposed to be adults and take care of ourselves, that I would work harder than Mr. Traney just identified to go down there and shake the walls and say, this is not acceptable. You're spending $3 billion on capital budgets, and there's no reason you couldn't cut a $30 million check to solve our budget gap. That would
Thank you. Daisha Eaton for Mr. Traney.
Health care costs, they're expensive here. Yeah. What, if anything, can the state do to reduce them?
Well, I think Denali Kid Care is a good avenue for those people that need Denali Kid Care, and I would support Denali Kid Care regardless of who brings it forward. And it needs to be supported so people can get access to health care. I'm always concerned about somebody has to decide whether they want to take their kids to a doctor or pay their rent or put food on the table. I'm concerned about the cost of health care because I've talked to some of my children that are in that situation right now worried about health care, as everybody worries about how they're going to pay for it.
Mr. Josephson, 30 seconds.
Daisha, my response to this would be first and foremost this. The governor's approach has been to say, I call it, and this is sort of harsh, but I call it the I'm taking my marbles and going home approach. It's the I'm not going to set up the exchanges. I'm not going to take the extra Medicaid dollars. Ted Stevens, under what I call the Stevens Doctrine, would never tolerate such a thing. We should get every dollar that through federal largesse we have coming to us. We should set up those exchanges. The buck stops there, and we should get it done and reduce those costs.
And finally in this segment, Grace Jang for Mr. Josephson.
Mr. Josephson, speaking of federal funding, should we increasingly lose more of it as a state, how would you respond in the legislature?
Well, Grace, that's a complicated question because it really goes to a question that hasn't come up so far today, and that is oil and gas tax reform generally. You know, I think that we're not going to see the million barrels per day that Governor Parnell talked about. That's not coming back. I wish it would. It might come back through the Chukchi or through Anwar, but it's not going to come back from the rest of the slope. So what we've got to do is we've got to get together, and we've got to push a large diameter gas line to Tidewater, shipping our product to Asia. That's the future. That's the next boon for Alaska. In terms of federal largesse, if anything, those budgets are going to shrink. I'm confident that Senators Murkowski and Begich and Congressman Young will do everything in their power to help us out.
Mr. Traney, 30 seconds.
Just that, keep in mind, with federal government dollars comes restrictions. They control you. That's how the federal government has been controlling the states. They give you money, and then they said, oh, by the way, we're going to cancel the money unless you keep these programs. I don't care whether it's IM or seatbelts law. Remember when you said the Drive 55? And the federal government says, we're going to cut your highway funds off unless you adopt Drive 55. And they've been doing that with seatbelt law. We have that now because of federal requirements. If we want the federal dollars, we have to dance to their tune.
Okay, before we go to closing statements, we're going to have questions that are identical for both of you from the two reporters. We'll start with Daisha Eaton and first for Mr. Josephson, and then Mr. Traney will follow.
How would you have voted on the governor's oil tax proposal?
You know, I've taken what I call the Democratic light approach, sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it's true. That is, Daisha, I have not pulled a lever yet except on the Planning and Zoning Commission. So my view on this is not as intransigent or as entrenched as some Democrats. I'm willing to dialogue on this, and that's reflected, I believe, in the fact that at least six oil field workers have contributed to my campaign. But I would not agree. I would not agree with the governor's approach. I would agree that it's fair and reasonable to ask for some quid pro quo, something in return from the industry in terms of buying onto oil and gas tax reform.
Okay, Mr. Traney.
I'd explore where the governor wants to go with this. You know, I'm concerned about the numbers because he reflects one set of numbers and the oil industry represents another view of it. So I'd want to find exactly who's telling us the truth from what perspective.
Okay, now we'll go to Grace Jang for Mr. Josephson, please.
Okay, Mr. Josephson, you touched on this. Is there a gas line in our future? If so, who should build it and when?
You know, Grace, my view is that there is a gas line in our future. The problem, however, with Speaker Chenault's bill is that it put all the eggs in one basket. It said the state would pay $7.5 billion, it would buy a small gas line, and would hope that there was a market on the other end. That isn't going to work. What might work is an inducement, for example, to couple oil and gas tax reform with further discussion of a gas line, and that is to dialogue about both at the same time. But we cannot bear all the risk on this project. That's the difficulty, and that's why it's been slow going to get it done.
Okay. Now let's go to closing statements, and we'll start with Mr. Traney. I'm sorry, you didn't get your chance to.
That's all right. We're ready to talk about gas. Anyway. The gas line needs to be built. It's got to come on North Slope. It's got to first hit Fairbanks. I don't know if you've been. I've spent time up there, and those poor people are dying, having to buy fuel oil at that price for fuel oil. That needs to come to Tidewater, either down Nikiski or in Seward, and be shipped, liquefied and shipped. There's no place to build a liquefaction plant in Valdez. It's got to be done down here. But it's first got to hit Fairbanks. And the idea of taking a small diameter pipe from Cook Inlet up to Fairbanks doesn't work. The people I've talked to says it's not economically feasible, and there's not enough new gas being found at Cook Inlet to maintain it. So we've got to get the gas from the salt, bring it down here, liquefy it, and ship it. Because Andy's right when it relates to that. Our future is with selling this gas to Pacific Rim.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to closing statements of 1 minute. We'll start with Andy Josephson. 1 minute, sir.
Thank you. I want to thank KAKM for allowing us this time this evening. You know, I was the first non-incumbent to file in the state of Alaska. I filed way back in August 2011. I guess I was sort of eager. I've always wanted to take a stab at this. I think I can help. I bring a new perspective to this race in that I'm an urban Alaskan. I've lived here for, it feels like ever, but I've lived in five other communities, including two rural communities. So I bring this unique background to this job. The hallmark of my political career will be about honesty, hard work, and accessibility, and I intend to be authentic as well. I have given my life to this state, quite literally, all 48 years of it. Alaska is the only place I've ever called home. It's the only place I've ever wanted to live. I want to grow our economy, but not forget the things that our Creator bestowed upon us. It's about improving our economic position without forfeiting the things that we've got. I have a plan. It's on my website. It brings new energy to this district, and I would appreciate your support. I want to say that the greatest joy in this campaign for me has been going door to door. I'd appreciate your support and vote on November 6th.
Thank you. Mr. Traney, 1 minute, sir.
Just that I appreciate the time to be here and talk to the voters. We've got a big election coming up, deciding where this state's going to go, and I appreciate your vote. You take a look at my record on the Anchorage Assembly. I have taken every issue on head first and dealt with that issue facing the Anchorage Assembly. I do the same thing with the state. And like I said, I live here. I've lived here for 40 years. I'll live here until they drag my dead ashes out of this state. I love Alaska. And part of that is making sure this state is a place to raise our children, our grandchildren. So I appreciate your vote.
Thank you, Dick Traney. Thank you, Mr. Josephson, and thank you, Mr. Traney. Next on Running, we'll hear from the candidates from House District 16. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Ellen Lockyer. On November 6th, voters will be selecting their choices for state and national offices, and KSKA will provide listeners updates on election results starting at 9 p.m. I'll be at Election Central in Anchorage to bring you live candidate interviews and the very latest returns during KSKA's special statewide November election roundup. Stay tuned to 91.1 FM for election coverage from KSKA.
My name is Josh Edge, web producer at AlaskaPublic.org. On election night, be sure to visit AlaskaPublic.org for comprehensive web coverage from reporters stationed throughout Alaska. You can also find podcasts for all of our election-related programs, from Debate for the State to Running to Talk of Alaska, and find links to voter resources and election results. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at APRN and like us on Facebook at AlaskaPublic.org.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.
Now let's meet the candidates for House District 16. They are Republican Jimmy Crawford, Democrat Harriet Drummond, and non-affiliated candidate Phil Isley. We'll have 1 minute opening statements, starting with Mr. Crawford.
Well, thank you for hosting this forum that we could get our ideas out there. My name is Jimmy Crawford, a Republican candidate for House District 16. You know, and I think if you want to get to know me, it's good to get to know my family and my history. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I'm in fact a fourth generation Alaskan, going all the way back to my great-grandparents, Ed and Rachel Crawford, who were the sheriff and restaurant owner in Sunrise, Alaska at the turn of the century. Following them were my grandparents, Ben and Brydine Crawford, who moved to Anchorage in the late 30s, early 40s, founded Alaska State Bank, one of the first banks in the area, and really helped to lay a good foundation for Anchorage that we live in today. My parents, Jim and Terry Crawford, have been business owners and politically active throughout their lives in the Anchorage area, and I myself today work in a family-owned operated small business, Alaska Real Estate LLC, where I'm the office manager. When I look at what we need to be doing as a state, I have a few priorities that I think need to be addressed. Number one, we need to have meaningful education reform. That includes a national ranking of 32nd that needs to come up, oil taxation reform, and help for small business. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Now let's go to Harriet Drummond.
I'm Harriet Drummond. I've been a small business owner and a homeowner in West Anchorage for over 30 years. I've served on the Anchorage School Board, and I'm currently serving on the Anchorage Municipal Assembly. I've seen how policy decisions at the state level affect budgeting and local decisions, and I believe I can bring some solutions to that area. My priorities include jobs for Alaskans, safe neighborhoods, excellent schools, affordable energy, smart public investments, and making sure road improvement and development doesn't happen without community input. As a public servant for nearly 14 years, I understand what it takes to be your representative. I want to keep solving problems for you at the state level. I'm Harriet Drummond. It would be my honor to work for my neighbors in House District 16 in Juneau. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Drummond. And let's go to Phil Isley.
Hi, my name's Phil Isley, and I'd like to thank you for inviting me. Since the legislature this last year unanimously passed House Bill 333, you're no longer required by law to invite me, so I feel kind of honored. What I'd like to do is look at education. I think instead of doing reform, we need to change the way that we educate our students. We need to go with interactive computer programs to advance the learning for our children so that we can catch up with some of the other countries in the world. I also think that we need to diversify our economy. Right now, our whole economy seems to be based on oil and government. And if both of those are scheduled to pretty much reduce in funds, and I think that that's going to have a significant impact on both the city and the state. I'd also like to see us work more on the way that we treat our energy sources.
Thank you. Let's move to reporter questions. Each of you will have 45 seconds to respond to the reporter's questions, and one of the other opponents, will have 30 seconds to comment. We'll make sure everybody gets in eventually and has comments. Let's go to Daisha Eaton for the first reporter question.
This is for Mr. Crawford. You've never been in the legislature before. Why are you running now?
When I look at the motivations for why I decided to run, especially in this last session, there's a lot of things that just aren't getting done in our state. And, as a person who has cared about our state a lot, and I look forward to the future, a future that I hope to be a part of, and a future that I want to, the next four generations of my family, I want to have a strong ability to earn a good living, have a fair wage, these kind of things. I saw that there are some things that are not getting done. When you look at education reform, we're number one in spending per student. We're ranked 32nd nationally. We're not investing our money wisely, and we're not getting a return for the money we are investing, and our kids deserve better. And I look at the oil taxation system. We're having oil companies transition from long-term plans to short-term plans because we are actively scaring them out with our tax plan. These are things that are the future of Alaska.
Okay, we've got to leave it there and see if either of your opponents wish to comment. Okay, no comments. Then we'll go to Kyle Hopkins.
The second question is for Ms. Drummond. You say in your campaign literature that you have zero tolerance for crimes of violence. But what does that mean? Are you talking about sentencing? From a practical standpoint, what are you saying about policy that you might
First
suggest?
Of all, I support our public safety employees fully and completely. I've been working to make sure that the budget at the city level covers our public safety employees and allows the police and the fire in particular to serve our community adequately. More than adequately. I'm sorry, I dislike the word adequate. It never sounds adequate to me. Encouraged the city to continue community action policing. They have expanded from Fairview to Spinard and now to Sand Lake, which is in my district of West Anchorage. And the communities are happy to see them, and they are being effective. In addition, the school resource officers provide daily contact with police officers in all the high schools and the middle schools.
We're going to have to leave it there. Either you gentlemen wish to comment. Okay, then we'll go back to Daisha Eaton.
And this is for Mr. Isley. You say in your statement that you're running because Alaskans are losing their freedoms. What do you mean exactly by that?
Each year in the legislature, I feel that some things don't get done, but like I was saying about House Bill 333, it basically makes it so it's easier for incumbents to stay in office. I ran against Hollis French in 2008 as a write-in campaign, and I spent like 45 minutes on the phone with the Division of Elections in Juneau talking about having my name listed somewhere inside the polling booth because they have sample ballots to tell you who to vote for, but nobody really knows who the write-in candidates are. So we should be able to know. And they said, there's no way you could do that. It was electioneering. And then they allow Lisa Murkowski to do it, you know.
Either wish, one of you wish to comment?
I do. Yeah. I happen to agree with Mr. Isley. It's been really difficult for the public to figure out who the candidates are this year. I know where to look, and I'm having trouble finding out who the candidates are. I think a number of the candidates have not even been invited to events like this because the media doesn't know where to find them. However, there is a write-in candidate in this race, and the Division of Elections has listed them on their website. I don't know who it is, and I haven't met them. I don't even know if they're male or female.
I think we should clarify one thing for our viewers, Mr. Isley. Is your name going to be on the ballot?
Yes, it will be.
Okay. Then let's go back to Kyle Hopkins.
This is for Mr. Crawford. You say that the state needs to tighten spending. In your opening remarks, you talked about the need to improve education to raise Alaska's performance. That can be expensive. How do you accomplish both those goals? Are there specific areas that you would cut in order to free up?
In regards to education specifically. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question. When it comes to education in particular, and as I said in the beginning, we spend the most of any state per student, and yet we're getting a 32nd national ranking for all meaningful statistics like graduation rates, class size, etc. So what we're doing is we're spending an incredible amount of money and not getting any meaningful return for it for our kids. So when we look at spending cuts, what are we going to do as far as state budgeting? I don't think it's an issue of how much money is going into education. It's about how that money is being used in education. And like I said, you know, from a business perspective, you know, if you're not getting a result for your investment, you're making a bad investment, and you need to make sure that money is going to where it's going to have the most effect. That's what we need to be doing when it comes to education.
Either one of the other candidates, Mr. Isley.
I agree with education, and I think if a way to do it would be to task the university with developing interactive programs to go on computers. And I think that if you did that, it would actually enhance the learning experience of the university students. We're funding the university as it is anyway through a lot of the state funding. It's mandated in the Constitution. And I believe that we could do a much better job if we had the university make the programs for the public schools.
Thank you, sir. Back to Kyle Hopkins.
This question is from Ms. Drummond. Similar question, some of your priorities also could be expensive. When I asked about public safety, you mentioned you support public safety employees. I assume that means paying them well. Mm-hmm. You support improving education in Alaska. Again, these things cost money. Are there other areas that you would cut in order to free up money for your priorities?
Well, I wouldn't pay to send people from Bush, Alaska, to fly people from Bush, Alaska to basketball games, for example. That's not a smart expenditure of public money. I don't think the state should put $100 million into Kibata, the bridge over Knik Arm, which was promised to have been fully funded by the private sector. A large part of our spending over the last few years hasn't been in the operating budget. It's been in the capital budget. I don't disagree that new infrastructure is needed, and I think our contracting community has been doing an awesome job. But we need to be smarter about our spending. Maintenance of existing facilities is critical before adding new ones.
Either one of the other candidates for 30 seconds. Okay, let's move on. We'll go back to Daisha Eaton, the last question in this segment.
And this is for Mr. Isley. You've talked about how our education system needs help, that it's failing, and you've suggested computer programs would be a good help for them. What else would you do if you were elected to make education better in the state?
I think that if you did that, you would see such a drastic improvement in our education system that you wouldn't have to do that much else. It would reduce the amount of funding that we're spending, especially in outlying areas and charter schools and homeschooling. One of the biggest problems I feel in the education system now is if you fall behind for whatever reason, if you have a bad teacher or if your parents are going through a divorce or if you get sick, there's no mechanism for you to turn around and catch up to the rest of your class. So if you have those problems 2 years in a row, you're going to be further behind, and you'll just continue to get further and further behind until you eventually drop out, which is probably the reason we have a 30% dropout rate.
Either one of the other candidates want to comment?
Sure. The third grade teacher knows which one of those kids would likely end up in prison. If a child is in reading, competently by the age of third grade, they're going to have big trouble. And we need to invest in early childhood education as well as elementary education. I don't think removing the teacher from the classroom is the solution, however.
Okay, now let's move to our candidate question segment. Each of the candidates will have an opportunity to ask one of their opponents a question. That candidate will have 45 seconds to respond, and the person who asked the question will then have 30 seconds to comment on what you've heard. And we're going to continue alphabetically with Mr. Crawford.
Okay. I'd like to ask Ms. Drummond a question. Ms. Drummond, how do you plan to increase oil and gas production and encourage long-term investment and job growth by the industry?
My priorities will include jobs for Alaskans. I plan to add value to our resources here instead of shipping raw materials out of state. Through the state's tremendous bonding capability, we can make industrial development bonding available to the business community. There's not enough integration between the research capabilities of the University of Alaska and the business community of the state. Healthcare will continue to be a huge part of our economy. We may as well take advantage of it. UAA is ideally situated among several hospitals. A research triangle can be developed. They can help produce future healthcare workers as well as healthcare innovations, such as in nanotechnology.
Mr. Crawford, 30 seconds.
I understand that healthcare is an important issue. I don't see the connection between oil and gas production, and I think it really comes down to an encouraging business model and taxation that works for industry. So I guess I fail to see where healthcare played into that question. Thank you.
Ms. Drummond, your question for a minute.
We've been talking about diversity here. I do believe some adjustments should be made to ACES, particularly at the higher end of its progressivity, but I don't support the governor's proposal of $2 billion in tax cuts with no guarantee of increased production or exploration.
I thought that was where you were going to be asking a question. We got out of sync here, okay? Let's go to Mr. Isley with a question.
I have a question for Ms. Drummond. For the last 4 years, I've watched you at city council meetings or assembly meetings, and I've watched you at community councils, and I've been amazed by your willingness to help people, whether they wanted to be helped or not, and I've kind of seen all the jobs that you've created, and it seems that most of them are government jobs. And I guess my question is at some particular time we're going to run out of money?
Okay, what's the question here?
The question is when we do run out of money, are you going to support the retirement plans for the divine benefit package, or are you going to support the people that are actually working for the government at this time?
I think supporting government workers is smart policy. A state like Alaska is naturally going to have a large number of government workers. It takes about the same number of government workers to provide services in a small state as in a large state. We've been losing public employees due to the change in the retirement plan. They move their families, they make a large investment in coming up here, and then they discover that they have a simple 401k plan and no Social Security. That's dumb public policy.
Comment, Mr. Isley, 30 seconds.
Well, in the future, when the funding goes down and you start losing oil revenues, you're not going to be able to sustain a defined benefits package, and you're going to have to make a choice on, are we going to support all these people that need help? Are we going to do our defined benefit package, or are we going to reduce public service? And I don't know how we're going to sustain them all.
Okay, we're going to go to our second round of questions from the candidates. Remember that your opponent or whoever you select will have 45 seconds to respond. You'll have 30 seconds to comment on the response, and that will be it. We'll move on. Mr. Sure. Crawford, once again.
This is for Mr. Isley. When you spoke about your basically investing in technologies to foster education, could you expound for us what specifically, as far as like tablets versus computers, are you speaking to, and how are we going to, basically pay for that on the state level?
On the state level, I don't think. Well, you'll be funding the university to do the programs. For the cost of the hardware, I think that you should take it out of the permanent fund. You can buy a notebook tablet or an iPad for less than $500 right now. If you were buying them in bulk, you could probably get them for $300. If you just turn around and give it to them, they won't take care of it. So if you force them to pay for it, they'll take care of it. It can be a one-term expense, or if they don't take care of it, it might be they might have to pay it for it again and again. But I think that if, you know, I use an iPad and I use small computers, and you can do a significant amount with a $300 computer.
30 seconds, Mr. Crawford.
It's an interesting idea, and I do worry about, like you said, tapping into the permanent fund. I do believe that that's an issue that responsible budgeting can definitely get us past, having to use that resource, which I believe is a resource that is to the people and specifically designed to keep them in sync with our resource development, keeping them aware of it. And also the replacement fees. I would be worried about, you know, kids break things, kids lose things, and that could be very expensive.
Okay, we'll have
for
to leave it there. Ms. Drummond, your second to last question in this round.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford, I've made a real effort to understand what your resume would bring to this office. Perhaps you can help me. Please name three accomplishments or achievements that recommend you to be one of the 60 Alaskans that will set policy and budget for our state.
Thank you. When I look to my qualifications, the things that make me worthy of representing District 16 and the constituents out there, I look at the experiences I have. You know, I've worked as a commercial fisherman in Bristol Bay, and that's given me a unique ability to live in and see what it's like in rural Alaska to be communicative to those issues, and also see what it takes to spur on fishing industry. I've worked in the construction industry as well as currently working as a private businessman in real estate and housing. So I'm very connected to what it takes to own a home. How is it possible for families to afford reasonable rents? And taking that business perspective and making sure that we're economically sound and budgetarily solid in our fiscal future is an absolute necessity that Juneau has not done a good job of doing. So when it comes to my experiences, I think I have very good experiences to lay a foundation for good decision making.
30 seconds, Ms. Drummond.
I suppose that three colleges and no degree doesn't give you much time to build a resume at the age of 23.
24, but thanks.
Okay, Mr. Isley, your final question for one of your opponents.
Ms. Drummond, you made a comment that you didn't think that we should replace teachers with computers, and I guess that was kind of directed at me, and I'm wondering where in there you felt that we should eliminate, or I felt that we should eliminate teachers. I think that computers would augment them, not replace them.
I believe that we have over 120,000 children to educate in this state. It takes a significant amount of people power to do that. The education policy requires that at least 70% of school budgets be spent in the classroom. And I know for one that the Anchorage School District has done a good job in this respect. Bush, Alaska is more difficult. They've got serious issues with energy costs that have to come out of the education budget. And I think we need to do some work in Bush, Alaska. The other issue with Bush, Alaska is
we're going to have to stop here. And
wireless technology. Thank you.
Mr. Isley, 30 seconds.
Well, if I gave anybody the thought that I wanted to cut the teacher's budget or reduce the number of teachers or anything like that, that's incorrect. What I want to do is give them all the tools available to assist the students in learning, and I think that the primary focus should be on the students and how much they can learn and the best way for them to learn. And I think that if we went interactive with computers, that would help.
Okay, thank you. We're now going to a segment in which the reporters will ask the same question of all three of you, and your responses will be alphabetically as before. Let's go to Daisha Eaton for the first question for all three of the candidates.
Let's start with Mr. Crawford. We talked about this, we touched on this a little bit. How would you have voted on Governor Parnell's oil tax bill?
And once again, 30 seconds for all of you. Go ahead, sir.
I disagree with House Bill 110. I don't think it gave the necessary incentives. What I have proposed is a sliding scale based on production that gives direct incentive, and it also gives a long-term budgeting ability for the state and for industry, which I think is vitally important and lacking right now in our current structure.
Ms. Drummond.
The Alaska State Constitution says that the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land and waters, for the maximum benefit of its people. I'll do my best to uphold this. The governor's proposal does not do that. Alaskans deserve their fair share of revenue generated by our resources.
Okay, and Mr. Isley.
I haven't read everything in House Bill 110. I've looked at it. I'm not sure I would support it fully, but I do agree that something has to be done. There has to be changes made. You've got to negotiate with the oil companies. Any tax you levy on them is just going to be passed back on to us eventually somewhere down the road. So you might say it's our money, but everybody shares the wealth in it. Everything that you add to it, the more that it costs them, the more it's going to cost us.
Okay. We're going to go to our second question, but before we do, I just want to note that we have time for a third question, so Deja Eaton will be asking that third question. But let's go to Kyle Hopkins. And again, it's alphabetical.
I'd like to follow up on something that Ms. Drummond mentioned, particularly because both other candidates talked about, you talked about your rural experience. Mr. Isley, I know you're a pilot and have flown in rural Alaska. What do you think about the idea of reducing or cutting travel money for villages, for sports? You know, it's expensive to fly kids to play basketball across the state. Would you agree that money should be cut or reduced? And Ms. Drummond, maybe if you could just elaborate.
Let's start with Mr. Crawford, though. Keep in line here.
Okay. So you're talking about cutting education spending for sports travel for rural Alaska.
Should the state be spending a lot of money to fly basketball teams around the state?
Well, I think a follow-up question that would be worthy is it okay to deprive kids in those rural areas of an opportunity to play sports? I know I think sports is a very impactful and necessary part of education. It teaches team building as well as a whole different form of education. And I think when we look at our state budget and what we're spending, there are so many other things that could be easily cut that would not affect kids and their ability to learn and compete in sports, that I would definitely want to make sure I go through all of those first before we get into depriving kids the opportunity to play sports.
Ms. Drummond, 30 seconds.
Thank you for the question. I don't think the state pays for all of that travel. A significant amount of that travel is money raised by the students themselves in every school. I know we see them all over Anchorage raising money through car washes and all kinds of other retail operations, and I think we need to encourage that. Every Bush school has a gymnasium. Every one of those gymnasiums is full of basketball players, and I think they need to be encouraged and supported and be able to stay in their villages to go to school.
Mr. Isley, 30 seconds.
Well, I was just down in Ketchikan, and I donated money to the Lady Kings to travel to some of their tournaments. Also, I know that Alaska Airlines occasionally gives breaks to sports teams so that they can travel, so I'm not sure that the state does all that funding for that. I think a lot of it's done by the individual school districts, and it's not necessarily state money. It's our property to taxes and things. So I don't think that we need to cut it, but you could definitely talk to the airlines and stuff to get discount rates for the travel.
I think we are getting closer to the end than I thought we might earlier. So let's go to our closing statements, and we'll start with you, Mr. Crawford. 1 minute, sir.
Well, thank you for holding this event, for asking the pertinent questions to be addressed to us. And again, you know, when you're looking at the difference in candidates, I'm a fiscally conservative guy that wants to bring a intelligent business approach to how we can address state spending, how we can look at our budget. And again, my priorities are reforming oil taxation so that we are encouraging industry developments and reinvestment and job creation. I want to see reformed education with accountability. Shoveling money at a problem hasn't worked for the last 20 years, and I don't think it'll work for the next. We need to be intelligently spending the money for the benefit of our children. And, of course, small business. I think we really need to be taking a proactive role as a state in fostering a small business environment that is creating jobs, allowing people to be job creators, and fueling our economy. You know, President Ronald Reagan knew that small business is the engine that grows our economy, and we need to be doing the same thing here in Alaska. Thank you, and I appreciate your
vote. Let's go to Harriet Drummond for 1 minute.
Thank you so much to KAKM for the chance to speak to the voters once again. There is very little opportunity for candidates to do this, so thank you very much. I've been a small business owner for over 30 years, a homeowner in West Anchorage since 1984, and a member of the Spinard Chamber of Commerce. From knocking on doors all summer, I know my neighbors are concerned about education, roads, public safety, and yes, garbage collection and snow removal, as well as jobs, taxes, and revenues. After serving on the school board, I worked at the neighborhood level through my community council on local issues such as liquor licenses, road improvements, and parks. I love Alaska. I love where I live in Anchorage. We have vibrant neighborhoods, vibrant business districts, great parks, trails, and all kinds of shopping and entertainment. It would be an honor to serve my community at the state level. I'm Harriet Drummond, and I appreciate your vote.
And let's finally go to Phil Isley, Mr. Phil Isley, for his one-minute closing statement.
The Democrats and Republicans haven't been working together in Juneau for quite some time. I believe there's enough independent voters out there that they could actually elect me. If you're looking for change in Juneau, I think that the best thing you could do is not vote for any incumbent at the time and look for somebody different. And I believe that I'm that different candidate. If you believe in term limits, you can make the term limits now with your vote just by not voting for the same people to go back and do the same thing year after year. And I'd like to go to Juneau and see what I could do to create change for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford, Ms. Drummond, and Mr. Isley. Next on Running, we'll hear from the candidates from House District 17. Stay with us.
You are listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage. Now, here's Annie Feit to tell you about the ballot propositions.
This is Annie Feit in the APRN newsroom. They haven't received as much attention as the statewide and legislative races, but there are two ballot propositions Alaskans will vote on November 6th. One is a bond package that would allow the state to borrow nearly $500 million for transportation and infrastructure projects. The other asks Alaskans to decide whether the state should hold a convention to amend or revise the Constitution. The state constitution requires that the question appear on the ballot every 10 years. The question is simply, shall there be a constitutional convention? One of the original convention delegates plans to vote no. Vic Fisher spent the winter of 1955 and 56 hammering out the details of the state's constitution with 54 other delegates. He thinks there are some parts of the Constitution that could use revising, but he says Alaskans are too divided these days to make changes that will stand the test of time. He says it was very different half a century ago.
Alaskans were unified in favor of statehood, and the Constitution was written before we were becoming a state. You did not have lobbyists. You did not have special interests pushing in this direction and that direction, trying to get their specific babies into the Constitution as you would have today.
But another elder statesman of Alaska politics has a different point of view. Former Attorney General John Havelock has written a book, Let's Get It Right, arguing it's time for the state to hold another constitutional convention. He thinks the state's constitution is an excellent piece of work, but he has a long list of changes he says should be made to make the document more relevant, including protecting the permanent fund, making the legislature unicameral, and fixing the initiative process. He doesn't agree with the argument that special interests would sway the process.
There's always contention in politics, but we live in a democracy and we should let the people have a say-so on some of these essential issues that have been effectively neglected by the legislature. So I just don't think that some of these awful things that people suggest are going to happen are going to happen.
Alaska Federation of Native Convention delegates recently approved a resolution urging members to vote for a new constitutional convention to establish subsistence priority for Alaska Natives. The constitutional convention question has appeared on the ballot four times previously. It has been voted down by large margins every time, except the first time it appeared in 1970. That year, the referendum was approved by a few hundred votes. But on that ballot, the question was poorly worded. A judge ordered a new vote, and Alaskans then turned it down. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Running on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. You can find Monday through Friday night's schedule for Running on KSKA and Alaska Public Television at alaskapublic.org.